We are back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. The news has been full of stories on tariffs and immigration and how both are affecting the economy. These aren't topics our wine contributor Ray Pfister typically talks with us about, but he says these national and international policies will show up as higher per bottle prices for the consumer. And one of the biggest changes coming down the pike are with labor laws.
The rules are changing in California, and I believe it is in 2020, where vineyard workers can no longer work 60 hours like they normally do, although they work far more than that. They're restricted to 40 hours, and it's also going to have a big effect on the wineries because they're limited as to how long they can have these people out there.
And these are the people picking the grapes.
These are the pickers. These are the folks that are working out there, and these guys are part of the land. They've been doing it. Some of them are families doing it all their lives. The key is that when the grapes are ready, the grapes are ready. There's no waiting. They measure it with a measurement called Rix, which is a temperature done through a refractometer. And basically, it tells the winemaker generally when they're ready to pick. And if that changes, it puts the winemaker in a bad position. So the grapes got to go. And you can't let them sit out there, can't let the birds get to them. And again, these are things people don't want to always think about. There are so many issues. But the labor force also, because of immigration issues, people are living in a bit of fear. And they don't know what they can or can't do. The other side of that, of course, is, and I'm going to use Napa as a specific example, is it's very hard to live there and be able to afford it if you're picking. There is a space that is for workers where they can live during harvest, just like they've done in the past, but a lot of them are natives. I mean, there's a lot of second-generation pickers there, specifically Mexicans. And it's expensive to live there. It's expensive for me to visit there. I can't even imagine living there. And it's becoming busier there, too. So a lot of people are traveling from further areas, which adds to their costs. So these all add up in the cost of a bottle of wine, something worth thinking about. And these people who pick have been doing this for a long time, and they're the ones that are going to continue doing it. A lot of everyday folks aren't going to do it.
I was going to say, are those folks typically migrant workers?
Typically. Many wineries have their own crews, and some wineries have had crews for 30 years. And again, they're family members. So when the old man gets older, and women are picking too, kids will take over.
Obviously, the whole immigration issue is going to play into this, and it's going to affect the bottom line and the bottle of wine price that we're going to see. What about tariffs? Are they affecting? I know that's affecting the Midwest a great deal. What's happening with winemakers out in California?
Specifically bottles. A lot of bottles come from China, and they're getting hit with that tariff, and it's going to cause the price of a bottle of wine going up. I don't know about corks. For people who know about corks, they come from Portugal. They actually are bark of a cork tree. And I don't know if that's having an effect at this particular point. It is Portugal, so it's not the same thing. Corks are expensive. High-end corks are more expensive. Longer corks will cost a winemaker more. Although I've heard in the last few years, the Portuguese have spent more time creating better quality corks, which has made winemakers much happier because there's always been this controversy over screw cap versus glass cap versus cork. I'm a cork fan. I'm a cork dork.
Well, I think most people who I know think that if it's not corked wine, it's not good wine. Is that true? I mean, good wine that comes in screw tops.
There's wonderful wine that comes in screw tops. But I'll always use the same analogy one winemaker gave me. He said, I have no problem with screw caps. And once Lafitte starts putting their wine in, Rothschild starts putting their wines in screw caps, I'll do it too. Very commonly, a lot of winemakers will put their rosés, their Sauvignon Blancs, and screw caps and maybe low-end reds or alternate brand reds. And I think the American public is slowly getting used to it. Australia kind of looks at us and said, hey, get over it. We've been doing this for years.
It doesn't affect the quality.
Not at all. It's an aging issue. And you could have that argument like a political argument, whether it's good, bad, or in between. Studies have shown you really don't get effective aging with a screw cap. A cork does let in a certain degree of air, minuscule, which helps the wine age and become what is desirable. But most Americans want to buy their wine and drink it that night.
Well, and the kinds of things that they're doing screw caps are whites and rosés, which you're not keeping for years anyway.
No, especially rosés. The rosés generally aren't going to be an ageable wine. Why would you want to? And most whites are the Chardonnays and some Sauvignon Blancs, yes, definitely, but they're not going to be in screw caps. And it's a price point thing, too, because many high-end Sauvignon Blancs are going to have a cork in it, and they're selling for a premium price. So you're not going to want a screw cap. And it's the old thing, you go in the restaurant and you're with your partner and, you know, this the crack of a screw cap versus the pop of a cork is a certain different level of romance.
When they start popping the pop tops, you know, then you kind of go, wait, I don't know that I ordered that wine.
Well, and I got to tell you, as a quick aside, man, wine in cans is taking over. It's getting huge. And I've tasted it and I'm embarrassed to say it's actually quite good. I shouldn't say embarrassed, but some people are making some very good canned wines, and it's getting very popular because of ease of getting at it.
And so that pop-top thing really wasn't hyperbole on
nope,
my part.
Not at all.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, I'll look for that the next time at a relatively high-end restaurant. It's like that.
Yeah, have your waiter bring it to the table. Tap on the lid. Oh, wait, yeah. It's not carbonated.
Yeah, don't have to worry about that. You know, you don't want to do that with a champagne or a sparkling wine, I don't think.
I'm not even going to hold my breath at this point. You never know. That's the thing. If there's something out there to be discovered, somebody's going to do it.
Yeah.
This is America. We do things like that. And who knows? Actually, if I remember correctly, Francis Ford Coppola's Sophia, they had made her wine. It's his daughter, Sophia. In cans, and it was a sparkling. I believe it could have been just a rosé, so I'm not going to swear to it.
Okay. All right. Well, next time. Find out next time. So we're at the end of summer. I hate to say that, but, you know, end of August. We're moving into September very soon. What are you drinking right now, and what are you recommending?
I drink everything.
Well, I know you drink everything all the time, but for people who are thinking about the kinds of foods that we're having at the end of the summer,
Sure. What
kinds of things are you really enjoying?
Sauvignon Blanc is one of my favorite wines. I've made the joke, and I made it to you, Sauvignon Blanc in the morning, a little glass of it's not a bad thing. I've grown to like Chardonnay when I find the Chardonnay that makes me smile. Chardonnay is a little more difficult to find something that's suited to the individual because you have the oak, the un-oak, the tanks versus the wood, that kind of thing. I've had both that have made me happy. There's a brand at Sonoma that is one of my high favorites that I just had recently, some slightly older, and I was just smiling like crazy when I had that. And I was really happy I could take that bottle home with me after the interview.
But you prefer the Sauvignon Blanc?
I'm a Sauvignon Blanc hardcore. It's just such a great wine. Sauvignon Blanc and scallops makes me go crazy. It's such a great taste.
So what is it about the flavor of Sauvignon Blanc? Is it a lightness? What is it for you that makes it so special?
I don't know if I called it a lightness, but it is a summery feel. It's an airy feel. It's a fruity feel. If you get from New Zealand, maybe a little more grassy. It can vary just like any wine, but I think it varies more extremely than reds. That's a very broad statement, and somebody will shake their head when I say that, I'm sure. It's just a cheery taste. And I can have it any time. I don't need to have it in summer. I'll have it in wintertime. I'm fine.
And it's not sweet.
No, it's definitely not sweet. And you know, and I drink a lot of Cabernet, and I'll still drink that in summertime. But Riesling is another favorite in summertime. We've talked about it in the past, and there's this – I just had a conversation with a winemaker about the whole myth that all Rieslings are sweet. They're not. Michigan, my home state of Ohio, Washington, but very specifically Oregon, are producing amazing dry Rieslings. I cannot recommend them enough, and they are just so full-bodied and tasty, and they go with just about anything.
I've had Rieslings in Germany, of course, which is where they're from, that in Austria, and it's rare to find a sweet one. They will have them, but it's like what you're saying. They're actually almost a table wine.
I think it's an image problem. And again, I'll go back.
It's probably the only thing we ever got for a long time was the sweet stuff.
Well, you know, Finger Lakes, another great area, they're making some deadly Rieslings there. But I'll go to Michigan because Michigan is not, even though it is a major winemaker, people don't think Michigan, but they have, gosh, just about everybody there makes Riesling, and many of them are making sparkling Rieslings, and they're wonderful. So it's getting past that, you know, apricot wine or whatever it is thing. Remember.
Boone's Farm.
Right. I mean, I can't rap on wineries like that. If they made a living, good for them. But there are fabulous wineries. Again, I'm going to go back to my home state. In Indiana, there's great wineries. There's wineries all over the country. I always tell people, try them first. Know what you're talking about if you're going to put it down. But maybe it'll open your eyes up. And Riesling is a great eye opener.
So good full-bodied dry Riesling, some Sauvignon Blanc. Anything else as we transition into fall?
Cabernet. And Pinot. You know,
you mentioned something before that I personally love a lot, and that's rosé.
Yeah.
I am very fond of rosés in all of their various forms, sparkling, still. I don't like it super sweet, but I like a semi-sweet. rosé sometimes.
Yeah, a little feel to it's not a bad thing.
Yep.
Sparkling rosé is just wonderful. It is such a great palate.
It is a nectar of the gods, I think.
It really is. I love it, and I love it from all kinds of different places. Spain, you know, Italy, and certainly here in the States. Rosé, I think people are getting better with it because there were so many years of the image, oh, it's like White Zinfandel. It's not. It is its own thing, and it's completely different. It's the one wine made from all kinds. You can have Pinot Noir, you can have Cabernet, you can have Zinfandel, and more, a Cabernet Franc. It's very common, and that's what makes it a unique wine because each one's going to be so completely different, and of course, how long it stays on the skins, the color, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because they can be incredibly pale, and they can be blush, and then they can be not quite, you can still see through them, but they're very much, and sometimes even ambery.
That's right.
Yeah,
they do, and the key is the French do generally lighter ones, but if you really do spend the time looking, the hues are very different. You're right. You get a little bit of amber in some of the bottles. It's fun to just compare them, but, you know, buy them, try them, and again, take a picture of that bottle so you remember it. There's an app out there. I don't know if I can mention it.
Sure.
It's called Delectable, which is a great way to remember what you've bought. And you can rate it and you can talk to other people who will turn you on to wines that are of the same ilk. There are some very heavyweight winemakers on Delectable. And if you want to get a rating from a winemaker, that's the place to get it from.
Very cool.
More so than a critic, in my opinion.
Well, and that's a great way to just learn about new things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, these are the experts, you know, and I'm not totally rapping critics because it's their tastes. And sommeliers are the more objective of anybody on the planet. Those people I have a great deal of respect for. But winemakers, I mean, these guys are out there tasting on a regular basis, let alone their own wines. No winemaker wants a house palate. They want to be able to taste the world. My very good friend Henrik, who I stay with him when I'm in Napa, his palate blows my brain away. We've done so many blind tastings, and he always narrows it. I've only fooled him once, and boy, was I proud.
Something to keep trying for.
That's exactly what it is. One day I'll get him again.
One day you'll get him again.
Exactly.
Well, until then, Ray Fisser, it is always a pleasure to have you in the studio, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Bonnie. Good seeing you.
Lake Effect's wine contributor Ray Fisser is the co-creator and voice of the wine blog and podcast Life Between the Vines. Fisser is also the owner and engineer of Fifth Floor Recording Company in the Third Ward.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.